Matthew chapter 24. I want to pick up in our reading. I'm reading from the New King James Version at verse 29. We made some brief remarks in regard to verse 29, 30, and 31 last Wednesday evening. Going to remind us of some of those tonight, not go back over all of it, and pick up mainly with our comments at verse 32. Matthew 24 and in verse 29, immediately after the tribulation of those days. Remember, the tribulation under consideration is that great tribulation spoken of back in the context. Word was used three times in the immediate context. King James Version initially translated afflictions. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of heaven will be shaken. I made mention to you that the language that is used here, if we go back in the Old Testament scriptures and look at the different accounts on which judgment was brought on various nations, whether it be the nation of Israel, the nation of Judah, whether it be the nation of Egypt, or other nations, the nation of Edom, in regard to these lights being mentioned here. The days the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from heaven, the powers of the heavens will be shaken. It's simply symbolic language to describe a time of great upheaval in a nation. And the time in which, you might say, God is putting out the light on a nation. That is, He's ceasing the light to shine on that nation. You might say He's putting it to death. When you snuff out a light, you put it out. You destroy it. And that's the language that is being used here. Just one example. If you'll turn with me quickly to the book of Ezekiel. Remember, Ezekiel was a prophet that was carried away into Babylonian captivity in the last carrying away. And he spent his time there prophesying during the 70 years of the time that Judah was in Babylonian captivity. In Ezekiel 32, and this is God's judgment upon the nation of Egypt. We'll not take time to read all of this, but we'll just pick up in verse 4 of Ezekiel 32. Then I will leave you on the land, and I will cast you out on the open fields, and cause to settle on you all the birds of the heavens. And with you I will fill the beast of the whole earth. I will lay your flesh on the mountains and fill the valleys with your carcass. I will also water the land with the flow of your blood, even to the mountains, and the riverbeds will be full of you. Of course, we're not to take this language literal, but he's talking about the people of Egypt being scattered over the land, becoming food for the birds of the air and the beasts of the field, because their dead bodies are going to be laying everywhere. Verse 7, then I will, note this, I will put out your light. I will cover the heavens and make the stars dark. I will cover the sun with a cloud, and the moon shall not give her light. All the bright lights of the heavens I will make dark over you and bring darkness upon your land, says the Lord God. Not literally, no more literal than the language in the first two verses that we read. But he uses the phrase, I'll put out your light. And that idea is expressed many times over in the Old Testament as well, even in the book of Revelation. And so that's the idea. As a matter of fact, even the falling of stars might be symbolic of great and high dignitaries of a nation being cast down or falling, that is, being destroyed during this particular period of time. And so that's the symbolic language that is being used here. He's not speaking literally about things that are going to take place in the second coming of the Son of Man. Because remember, that which is under immediate consideration is the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 A.D. Verse 30, then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven. The sign of the Son of Man. We've talked about this before. The sign of the Son of Man will appear. Of course, it's not going to be the Son of Man literally appearing, but it's going to be a sign of the Son of Man appearing. Appearing, note it says, appearing in heaven. And then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. Now, we've mentioned this before. This is what Daniel spoke of in Daniel chapter 7 and verse 13, where one like the Son of Man comes to the Ancient of Days in the clouds and receives a kingdom. And it'd be good if we had time to go back and read Daniel chapter 7. But that's the account here. And Jesus is going to mention that again, and we will not take time to read it, but over later on in chapter 26, during his time of trial, he's going to mention the same thing to the high priest, that the high priest would see him coming in the clouds. Literally, no, but they would see him, you might say, receiving his dominion and power. Because he's going to be vindicated. He's going to be revealed as the Messiah, the Christ, the Son of God, in the destruction of Jerusalem. And that's the idea that's being expressed here. And then all the tribes of the earth will mourn. There the word earth, but it's literally the word land. All the tribes of the land. Why tribes? Because of the 12 tribes of Israel. 12 tribes of Israel, they're going to be mourning. They're going to be mourning their destruction. They're going to be mourning the destruction of their city, the destruction of their temple. Of course, there's going to be great wailing. Great mourning is going to take place. And they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven and with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to another. Made mention last Wednesday evening that what's under consideration is a gathering together of God's people, God's faithful. In the Old Testament, when God scattered his people, then he would gather his people. We could go back and read occasions of that taking place. Well, that's just another way of saying that's what's going to happen here. Now, he's not going to literally gather them. The angels, not the angels of heaven. I believe the word angels there, as it is translated many times in the New Testament, same word translated messengers. Messengers. And he will send his angels, his messengers, with a great sound of a trumpet. And they will gather together his elect. Who are the elect? Well, we've already studied that back in verse 22. Unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. The elect are Christians. So as Christians were scattered during the Roman and Jewish wars, then God preserves and takes care of his people. They will be gathered back together. They will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to another, because that's the way they'll be scattered during this particular period of time. All right, before we proceed on with verse 32, any questions or comments? So in verse 32, now learn this parable from the fig tree, he says. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So why is he bringing this up? Now learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branch, when points back to, well, when's this going to take place? Well, he doesn't answer the question when this is going to take place. When are this temple going to be destroyed? When's the city going to be destroyed? Well, he didn't give a specific answer to that question. But what he does is he gives signs. He gives many signs. And so what he does here, he illustrates, after having given signs, and the primary sign, of course, was the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel in verse 15. But there are other signs in the chapter as well. So Christians would know that the time was near. And so he gives, you might say, a parable in regard to the fig tree. And isn't this something that he uses, the parable of the fig tree, especially in light of the fact that we studied earlier in the context of Matthew in regard to Israel being likened to a fig tree. Remember when he came into the city, headed to the city of Jerusalem, and he cursed a fig tree because it was without figs? And so here he uses an example of a fig tree. In this part of the land, which they were located, most of the trees there are evergreen trees. They stay green all year. But the fig tree was not so. It would lose its leaves during the winter, And then the late part of the spring, it would begin to bud out and put forth leaves. Well, when it did that, everybody that would see the fig tree putting on leaves would know that summer is near. That's a sign. That's a sign that summer is near. This is much like what was spoken of back in verse 27 and 28. For as the lightning comes from the east and flashes west, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. Everybody will see, everybody will know, it will not be something secret. It will be like a carcass laying out in the open field and you see vultures circling around. You know what that means. You know what that means. And so it is with the fig tree here. Verse 32, now learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So here's the point, verse 33. So you also, when you see all of these things, when you see all of what things? Now what are they going to see? They're going to see the signs. That's what they're going to see. They're going to see the signs, the abomination of desolation, the wars and rumors of wars and earthquakes in various places and false prophets and false Christ and all of these things taking place. When they see all of these things taking place, it's like leaves budding out on a fig tree. You know that summer is near. So verse 33, so you also, when you see all of these things, and all of these things, evidently, you go all the way back to verse 4 up to this context. Up to this very verse. That's the all of these things. So when you see all of these things, know that it is near. Note that. Know it is near. What is near? Let me ask you that question. What is near? They've been given all of these signs. Remember, the question was asked, tell us, when will these things be? Well, he doesn't give them a specific time. He doesn't give them a day and an hour, but he gives them signs regarding a time period. When they look at those signs, when they see those things taking place, they know that summer is near. So you also, when you see all of these things, know that it is near. Know that the destruction of Jerusalem is near. Know that the destruction of the temple is near. Know that the coming of the Son of Man is near. At the very doors. Note that, at the very doors. If you're reading from the English Standard Version, I think it's a better translation for the word doors. Anyone reading from it tonight? Has gates, doesn't it? Gates. Know that it is very near, at the very gates. The gates of what? The gates of the city. That's what's under consideration. Know that destruction is near. When something was before the door, it's said to be near. If something was before the gate, it's said to be near. And so, the destruction is near. It's at the very door. It's at the very gates of the city. So you might say it is almost imminent to take place. Verse 34. Assuredly, I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till all these things are fulfilled. Now, all these things has to be the same, all these things in the previous verse, verse 33. If all these things they could see, then all of these things are going to be fulfilled. They're going to take place during the lifetime of these people living. That means they would see the days when the sun will be darkened and the moon not give its light, the stars will fall from heaven, the powers of heaven will be shaken. Not literally, they'll not see stars falling from the heavens, they'll not see the sun darkened, they'll not see the Son of Man literally riding on a cloud, but they'll see that taking place symbolically in the Roman and Jewish wars and in the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. Because the generation that is then living. Now, think about this. Jesus is speaking about his contemporaries here. Suppose that he is about 30 years old, maybe 33. Suppose he's 30 years old. What would a generation be then? About 40 more years. Isn't that something? 40 years later, Jerusalem's destroyed. 70 A.D. So this generation will by no means pass away. It'll not perish. It'll not die before all of these things are fulfilled, before all of them are completed, before all of them take place, before all of them come to pass. Then, he says in verse 35, heaven and earth will pass away. Same words. It'll perish. It'll be destroyed. But, he says, my words will by no means pass away. That is, they'll not pass away before they're fulfilled. He simply speaks of the certainty of the things that he has mentioned coming to pass. Yes, heaven and earth will pass away. But the certainty of what he has spoken is going to be fulfilled. Verse 36. But of that day and hour knows no one. No, not even angels of heaven, but my Father only. Verse 36 is the verse that is normally taken as a dividing place in this chapter for the day under consideration to be the second coming of Christ. But I suggested to you that Lord's Day evening, that the day under consideration is the day of the Lord, mentioned back in Luke 17, the day of the Lord, and mentioned in Luke 21, the day of vengeance, in which all things that are written regarding Israel and the city of Jerusalem will be fulfilled. It is the day of the Lord. It is the day of judgment coming upon Israel and the nation of Israel and the city of Jerusalem at that time. But note this, of that day. Now, what day had he spoken of in the context of Matthew 24 before? Being honest, we would have to say, well, he hasn't mentioned any single day before, has he? We might say that day. What day? Well, the day in which the Son of Man is going to come.
And it's verse 36. It says, but of that day, this is where it sort of switches gears.
Right.
And, instead of saying days, he said, but of that day.
Right.
One particular day. I think he's talking about the day of judgment.
The day of judgment, the second coming of Christ.
Right.
That's a way to look at that. I don't take that position, but a lot of people do. A lot of people believe that, well, he's talking about the second coming of Christ here on that day. But when we compare with what's said in verse 36 through the end of the chapter with Luke 17's account, Luke 17 uses the language here regarding the day of judgment upon Israel and the city of Jerusalem. And we'll see that when we get down to verse 40 through 41, specifically about two men will be in the field, one will be taken, the other left, two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken, the other left. So that day under consideration, I believe, is the day of the Lord. Remember back in Luke 17, there was days and day. And his day was mentioned in Luke 17 in regard to this time period. It's his day under consideration, the day of the Son of Man, the day in which he comes in judgment upon the city of Jerusalem. Now, we can add some things to that, and we'll see that, I think, more clearly when we get to the beginning of chapter 25. And there's that little word at the beginning of chapter 25, then. The kingdom of heaven will be likened to 10 virgins. Then, I want you to look at that closely if we don't get to it tonight. I want you to follow that word then through the context of Matthew 24. And when you come to Matthew chapter 25, that's where the subject begins to change because the language is almost totally different. Now he says then. Then what? Well, then after the Son of Man has come in the destruction of Jerusalem and the nation of Israel, then the kingdom of heaven will be likened to 10 virgins. Because later on in chapter 25, we see that it is the judgment in regard to Christ's second coming. But verse 36 through the end of the chapter, I believe, still continues with that day. The only day that he's spoken about in Matthew chapter 24 is the days of the Son of Man, the days of the great tribulation period. So that day has to be a part of those days. Follow my argument, if you will, verse 36. But of that day and hour, note that, of that day and hour. Now, why would he say day and hour? Because they had asked when will these things be? Well, his answer to them is, I'm not giving you a specific time. Day and hour is a specific time. You know, if someone invites you somewhere, you want the day and you want the hour to be there. You want a specific time. Jesus says, I'm not giving you a specific time. I can't give you a specific time. The specific time is only in the mind of God. He set the time. He's appointed the time. It is determined by Him, not by me nor the angels of heaven. So day and hour, the words simply have reference to a specific period of time. That's all they have reference to. It's not a 24-hour day, but just to a specific time within a period of time. So, but of that day and hour, no one knows. No one knows. No one knows when the judgment upon the city of Jerusalem is going to take place. That is the specific day and the hour that's going to happen. As a matter of fact, it's going to cover a period of time. 3.5 years, as a matter of fact.
Did Jesus know?
Did Jesus know? He said he didn't know. I believe Jesus.
So you're saying Jesus did not know when the destruction of Jerusalem was going to take place?
Well, that's what he said. He said, but of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. My Father only? That excludes Jesus.
That is, if you think it's talking about the destruction of Jerusalem, which I don't, I think it's talking about the final judgment.
Okay. All right. Yes.
So that indicates judgment.
Well, in the judgment, look at that verse very closely. In the judgment, are we going to be cut in two with swords?
It's a figure of speech.
A figure of speech. Because this chapter's filled with figures of speech, isn't it? This chapter's filled with symbolic language that talks about judgment upon a nation. And you don't have the judgment at the second coming of Christ being talked about as one being cut in two with a sword. That takes place in the judgment of a nation. Look at the context very closely. Follow with me. I understand that many people believe that verse 36 is the dividing point, but just follow my argument. I understand what you're saying. Verse 37. But as the days of Noah were also, so also will be the coming of the Son of Man be. Now the coming of the Son of Man here is the same coming of the Son of Man that's already been spoken about in the context. It's not a different coming of the Son of Man. Same coming. What about the days of Noah? Well, they were unexpecting the Lord's judgment. Even though they had been warned, they weren't prepared. They didn't heed the warning that Noah was giving them for 120 years. They just went about their daily lives as if no warning had ever been given. And when the judgment came swiftly and quickly, they were unprepared and they were not ready. That's what Jesus is telling his disciples here. Don't be caught unaware when the judgment comes upon Israel and the city of Jerusalem. Don't be like the people of Noah's day. You've been warned. You've been warned. You've been given these signs. So when you see the signs, heed them. That's what he's saying. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. and did not know until the flood came and took them all away. That is, destroyed them. So also will be the coming of the Son of Man be. Took them all away. That phrase, took them all away, simply means destroyed them. That's how they were taken away. Look with me over in Ezekiel. Ezekiel 33. We're going to read the first four verses. Ezekiel 33. Again, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, speak to the children of your people and say to them, When I bring the sword upon a land, and the people of the land take a man from their territory and make him their watchman, when he sees the sword coming upon the land, if he blows the trumpet and warns the people, well, what's coming upon this land? Matthew chapter 24, the sword is coming, judgment is coming. A watchman is blowing the horn or blowing the trumpet. Then whoever, verse 3, when he sees the sword coming upon land, if he blows the trumpet and warns the people, note verse 4, then whoever hears the sound of the trumpet and does not take warning, if the sword comes, note this, and takes him away, his blood shall be upon his own head. They were taken away in the flood. They were killed. They were destroyed in the flood. And so Jesus is telling them here during this time, heed the warning. Look at the signs. I've told you, when you see the fig tree putting on buds, know that summer is near. When you see these signs, know that the destruction of Israel and the city of Jerusalem is near. Heed the warning. Don't be like the people of Noah's day, unprepared, when God quickly executes and carries out his judgment. Then he says, in verse 40, then two men will be in the field, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken and the other left. Okay, this is, as some say, the second coming of Christ. What does those two verses mean? Do they mean what the premillennialists teach? You know, there was an entire set of books written called The Taken, I believe, or The Left Behind. That was it, The Left Behind. Because the premillennials believe in the rapture. And this is where they get that idea. Well, during the rapture, one's going to be taken and the other left. Does that sound like the second coming of Christ? Is that what's going to happen in the second coming of Christ? When Christ comes, one person's going to be taken and the other left? No, everybody's going to be taken. This world's going to be destroyed. Now, what's under consideration? One's going to be taken and the other left. When you keep it in the context, it is people being taken captive and one left. People being destroyed or killed and one left. That's what's under consideration. As a matter of fact, look with me in Luke's account in Luke 17. Luke 17. Remember, don't forget about Luke's account here. Luke 17. Because we know that it is clearly the destruction of Jerusalem that's under consideration. Luke 17. Verse 31 and following. In that day, he who is on the housetop and his goods are in the house, let him not come down to take away. And likewise, the one who is in the field, let him not turn back. Now, we read that in Matthew 24. Remember Lot's wife. Whoever seeks to save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life will preserve it. I tell you, in that night, there will be two men in one bed. One will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding together. One will be taken and the other left. Two men will be in the field. One will be taken and the other left. John 19 and verse 6, we have that word, taken. It's in reference to them taking Jesus as a prisoner on the night in which he was betrayed. They took him captive and led him away. That's the idea in the word taken. They took him captive and led him away. The same thing You know, during this particular period of time, Josephus tells us that I forget how many thousands of Jews were taken captive and sold around the world for slaves. It happened, when you go back in the Old Testament and you read about nations being destroyed, that's what happened. You know, when the Babylonians came into the land of Israel, what did they do? They took many people captive back to Israel. When the Assyrians came, they did the same thing and scattered them and sold them, made merchandise out of them. Some were taken, some were left. Some were killed, some were left. Some were taken captive, some were left. Look with me in chapter 21 of Luke, chapter 21, and you know, this is Luke's rest of his account in the destruction of Jerusalem. Now, in chapter 21, Luke doesn't mention the two men and the women grinding, does he? Because he'd already mentioned that in chapter 17. But in chapter 21, he does mention something about people being taken captive. Look at verse 24. And they will fall by the edge of the sword and be led away captive into all nations. Jerusalem will be trampled by the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles were fulfilled. So he mentions people being taken back in chapter 17. But here he mentions them being taken captive. And that's what's under consideration. People being taken captive. As a matter of fact, in my lesson on the Lord's Day morning, when we read in Habakkuk about the Babylonians coming, and destroying Judah, remember there in Habakkuk chapter 1, they were described as riding horses and so forth. I forget exactly the language, but they gathered captives like sand. They gathered captives like sand. I don't know if you've ever been, if you've ever trekked across a desert or whatever, but when you go across a desert, you collect sand. You'll walk a few miles and you'll have to sit down and pour sand out of you, but you wonder how it gets in there. Well, when the Babylonians came, they collected captives like sand. And so you go back and read in the Old Testament, and that's the language here. One will be taken and one will be left. One will be taken prisoner, one will be hauled off into captivity or either killed, and the other will be left. There'll only be a few left in the land. Brother Pike, you had something?
Pray always that you be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. That sounds like judgment to me.
Sounds like the second judgment, yeah. I agree with you. It does sound like the second judgment. But it also sounds like it could be a temporal judgment as well. And we'll see that in the context. Someone else had a hand up, Brother John? Right.
Signs don't matter. You know, what's going on doesn't matter.
Right. No other language in the New Testament speaks of the second coming of Christ like this does, if this is the second coming of Christ. It happens in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye. We'll all be changed, not taken. We'll all be changed very quickly. Okay, so we were at verse 40 and 41, so we saw the same language in Luke 17. In Luke 17, you have to say is the destruction of Jerusalem. Some say, well, it could describe the destruction of Jerusalem and it could describe the day of judgment too. That's a possibility. Verse 40, then two men will be taken. In one field, one will be taken, the other left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken, and the other left. I have a verse here, Jeremiah 6 and verse 11. I forget what it says, but you can look up that ideal of taken in Jeremiah 6 and verse 11. Perhaps have something to do with being taken captive. And so verse 42, he says, "Watch therefore, watch, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming." Now, he hasn't talked to me. He hadn't talked but about one coming. There was no question posed to him. Remember, in Mark's account and Luke's account, there was no question about his coming posed to them. Mark and Luke assumed that the destruction of Jerusalem, the end of the age, the end of the Jewish nation, would bring about the Son of Man's coming. It would bring about his judgment upon that nation. And so he says, "Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour," and note that, "what hour the thief would come." Now the King James Version uses the word "watch." The word "watch." The word "hour" here, and the word "watch" simply means a time period. The Jews, before they were dominated by the Romans, separated their watches, that is, when one would take their guard post, into three equal time periods at night, beginning at 6 o'clock. So from, what would it be, from 6 to 10, 4 hours would be the first watch. The next watch would be from 10 to 2. The next watch would be from 2 to 6 in the morning. That's the way the Jews did it, and perhaps the Greeks as well. But when they began to be dominated by the Romans, they broke their watches in the night down to 3 hours at a time. And so the King James Version, and that's the word "watch" there instead of the word "hour." But though this, if the master of the house, if the ruler of the house had known what hour, that is, what time, the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Now, what had he told them to do in regard to the second coming? Was it in regard to the second coming? Or was it in regard to the judgment that was coming? How could they watch? How could one watch for the second coming of Christ? I want to know what signs the Bible gives us for the second coming. Someone give me a sign of the second coming of Christ.
Well, no, but that may not be a sign. It just says before the end comes, that Noah might be like the days of Noah, would be like Sodom and Gomorrah, and we're not witnessing that today. I don't know what.
We're not given any signs for the second coming. The second coming is coming like a thief in the night.
We're just told to be prepared.
But Jesus is telling them to watch. Why? Because they can see it coming. I quoted Hebrews 10:25 on Sunday. As you see the day approaching, you can watch for it. The day is approaching. They could watch for it. All right, we'll pick up here then at the last few verses of the chapter next Wednesday evening. Thank you very much for your kind attention.